Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. And today we're going to start the show a little bit differently than we typically would on a Thursday. Often on Thursdays, we let you hear pretty much straight away from Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt. And we'll still let you hear from them throughout the show, and specifically at 6 o'clock in our pick six at 6. But, Anthony, I thought that we would start the show today by doing something that we've never done before, which is to revisit an old first and 10. Because it's rare. Like, we get rematches. And maybe this is something that if we like it, we can do it next year on the divisional games where we play teams a second time, or when the Commanders play teams a second time. But as we work into this wild card weekend, where the Commanders are going to take on the Buccaneers, the team that they faced in week one, I thought, what better way to try to go back and remember what we actually talked about week one than going back and looking at the notes? And I write out the first and 10, so we didn't have to even go like transcribe it or anything. We just go back and look at the list. So I say that's what we do to start the show today.
Hey, look, I'm with it, man. And guess what, Craig? We're 3-0 in rematch games. Just saying.
Look at the stats that Anthony Haney is bringing to the program. Well, let's see what's relevant, because I think there's some stuff that's relevant and some stuff that's going to be not quite as relevant. And in fact, the first one, Anthony, and we can go full effects here. You ready?
Number one.
Ooh. The first thing that I wrote down is, because remember, this was a loss. So I go, we're going to need to multitask all year long. We need to be able to evaluate games as they are and in the context of the larger project at hand here. Realistically, this game, not good for both. The stated goal for the short term is to establish a play style, play fast, play physical, communicate well. That wasn't good enough, which is something Dan Quinn would admit. I think looking back, that's not a bad observation. And luckily, like, that's something that we've had to do a little bit less of. We've been able to look at games a little bit more as they are. But I think we've also done a good job of multitasking and saying, like, yeah, no, the receiving talent maybe hurt a little bit here. Or next year when they have a better corner two or whatever. Like, a lot of the problems they've had this year have been areas where we say, hey, they'll work on that long term, and that's okay. It's understandable why they have that. But I think the other thing is, like, on the play style front, that was an issue week one. It basically hasn't been an issue since week three. I think the offensive line, they want to be a little bit more physical. Defensive line, they probably want to be a little bit more physical as time goes on. But generally speaking, like, they show up, they hit people. The missed tackles that were a huge issue in week one have not been an issue. They're the fifth best tackling team in the league by most metrics. So I think that overall, like, good observation. And luckily, Anthony, part of the reason that they've gone 12-5 and 12-4 since week one is because some of that stuff changed.
Yeah, definitely a lot of it changed. And I think week one is also just a tough game to, like, evaluate, just because you don't have a lot of tape on these teams. You know, people come in with different schemes, different philosophies, and things of that nature. So I think also when you factor that in, you got to credit some of that to, like, I guess, the loss. And then also, we had a whole bunch of, like, moving pieces, moving parts.
Oh, we're going to get
there. Their first game playing together.
For sure, we're going to get there. The second thing, though, I said,
number two.
There we go. The second thing. It was also more big picture. I made a joke about how they have finished Fridays and they did not have a finished Sunday. Because on third downs in that game, they were horrendous. And part of it was penalties. Like, the first third down of the game is a 3rd and 1 where they force an incompletion on a fade to Mike Evans, and Cleveland Furrell picks up a silly hands to the face penalty. He and the offensive lineman, I think it was Tristan Wirfs, just get, you know, they're mashing each other, and Furrell's hands slip up and pop dude in the helmet, and it's a first down. There's a couple others that are first downs on penalty. Then there's a ton of conversions. And so I think Tampa was really aggressive on third down and took advantage of some stuff with Washington, and they just didn't finish drives. They also didn't finish sacks. They got a ton of pressure on Baker in that game, and they did not sack him very many times, if at all. So they have got to make sure that when you collapse the pocket against Mayfield, you don't give him anywhere to go because he is real slippery in the pocket, and he's also actually the seventh leading rusher in terms of scrambling yardage by quarterbacks this year. Of course, Jaden is number one, but Baker's seventh. So he'll run on you, he'll squirm around in the pocket and dart a ball down the field on you. And so between sometimes that was the cause of both, like why he would do that on a third down. But then offensively, they also just didn't finish on third downs. And that was a huge, huge key in that game. And they've obviously been much better since then, but they've also had their moments, I think, since then.
Yeah, and I think Joe Witt, and we'll hear from him later today, but he just talked about Baker just always, you know, keeping the play alive. And sometimes when he's scrambling to throw as opposed to just take off. So
his, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. His outside the pocket numbers this year.
Crazy.
Are like truly historic levels of good. Let me pull this up real quick because this is worth the slight delay here on the old radio. We want to search the term outside. There we go. Baker Mayfield completed 34 of his 47 passes outside the pocket for 406 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 1 interception this season. Good for the highest completion percentage on such passes in a season in the next-gen stats era. So I believe that's back to either 2016 or 2018. It might even go further back than that. So he is 72% outside the pocket. He threw outside the pocket on just 10% of his attempts this season, the fourth lowest rate in the NFL. So when he gets outside the pocket, or he doesn't always like do this. It's just when he does, he's deadly. The Commanders allowed the fifth lowest completion percentage and the fourth fewest yards per attempt on passes thrown from outside the pocket this season. So the Commanders have done a good job when guys get outside the pocket of plastering, of applying pressure, of doing the things you got to do to bring that number down. But Baker has been an absolute killer when he gets outside the pocket. And he's really good, again, maneuvering within the pocket. So that finish of can you actually finish sacks, like that's a huge one on top of the other ways you need to finish plays in this game. And then my third takeaway.
Number three.
From week one's edition of First and 10, as we look back at that game and see what's still relevant on this one, I wrote down, I have not lost faith in the plan because I still trust the people in charge. I can't say I expect a bunch of stuff to happen, watch it happen, then be like, oh my God, how did that happen? Which, again, like I think that's actually applied a lot more than you might first realize because they were 0-1 and we're thinking like, man, this might be a rough season on the old wins and losses. And they went 12-5. But I think often when we would get really frustrated with this team, my question would be, Anthony, how often did we get frustrated with stuff that we didn't see coming? Right? Most of the frustration is like, hey, Benjamin St. Juice can't cover number one wide receivers. And it's like, yeah, no kidding. It's, hey, Nick Allegretti is not the best guard in the NFL. Like, okay, got it. I don't feel like there was a ton after like week three. And there's one guy in particular in Terry McLaurin who the first couple weeks was pretty frustrating. And there's been a couple of times this year where he gets lost in the game and you're just like, where is 17? And I'll talk a little bit more about him next in the context of what's changed between week one and now. But by and large, I think a lot of the stuff that we've been frustrated with at times this year through the winning, which there has been way more than the losing, has been stuff we predicted. So, like, honestly, that's kind of played out the way I thought in a lot of ways. And I think we've, on this show at least, we've done a good job of being like, only so much you can do in 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the questions that we had, you know, Forbes, Jamin, some of the guys that, you know, necessarily aren't here now, they've sort of kind of been answered, and we've been forced to make changes, and that change has us, you know, in a good position to go down to Tampa and really, you know, challenge these guys again. So I'm looking forward to it.
For sure. All right, when we get back, we'll roll through the rest of them. A lot more of the 4 through 10 on these, Anthony, were personnel related. So we'll get to talk about a lot more players, a lot less philosophy, if you will, next. We're looking back at week one against Tampa to see what's still relevant as we head into week one of the playoffs against Tampa on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5 p.m., Melissa Stark, sideline reporter for Sunday Night Football on NBC, will join us. Of course, she was on the sidelines for Washington and Atlanta Sunday night when the Commanders clinched, and she'll be there again this weekend in Tampa with Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth on the call for the Commanders' wild card playoff bout against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Our pal Dan Bazzuta previews the entirety of Wild Card Weekend coming up with us in about 12 minutes or so from right now. Never read the comments. A good one today at 5:30. So we got a bunch of great stuff coming up on the show. Right now, though, we are working through the first and 10 from earlier in the season. If you don't listen typically on Mondays, first and 10 is the segment we do in the first segment of the show. First segment, 10 observations. And so what did we write down, slash what did I write down, about this Tampa-Washington matchup in week one that we find still relevant here in the wild card weekend, week one of the playoffs?
Number four.
The fourth thing I wrote down, Anthony, was in the short term, a lot of what we saw was expected. The corners struggled against great wide receivers, and young talent that was worth seeing against two all pros, you know, how they do. The answer was not great in Emmanuel Forbes and Benjamin St. Juice. We needed more from the non-Terry McLaurin wide receivers, and it was harder for Jaden Daniels to read a Todd Bowles defense than it was for him to read the vanilla defense that he saw in the preseason. I actually also made a pretty funny note, which is to say that I want players to play more in the preseason next year. Please remind me of this next preseason. So a lot of what happened week one, although it's not great and it wound up being wholly unindicative of what this team became, I think was pretty expected. I think we've kind of covered most of that ground, or we're about to when we get into the individual guys.
Number five.
I did think the preseason note was kind of funny, though. Remind me next year. I like preseason football. All right. So we don't need to spend a ton of time on this because this guy is not relevant anymore. But it is a big story of the season. Emmanuel Forbes. I had made a note before he wound up getting benched in this game that he wasn't playing hard enough, that he wasn't as aggressive in tackling, that he wasn't doing the things that they asked him to do, the Dan Quinn play style. And it's why he ultimately got benched, Anthony, and it's why he ultimately got cut. And I think it's important to remember that when we watch this team struggle and feel like they're a corner, if not two corners short, they, I don't want to say they didn't have a choice, but they made the extraordinarily worthwhile and easy to explain calculation that the first round pick from last year was worth seeing if they could coach up. Turns out he wasn't. And then they ultimately trade for Marshon Lattimore, which is kind of the Forbes replacement. And then we'll see how he does. And they'll obviously try to find another corner, I would think, this offseason, try to kick Mikey back inside. But so much of what the consternation about the cornerback position and them ultimately having to use a resource in a third-round pick and the other, you know, pieces involved in that trade to get Marshon Lattimore come from Emmanuel Forbes' failure here in D.C. And boy, was it on display week one.
Yeah. Just thinking back to like the Forbes experience, man, it's, man, did Ron get that wrong? He got it wrong, man.
Well, it's funny because like in the comments, maybe we'll get to some of these and never read the comments today. Some people are like, man, after watching Michael Davis, why did they cut Forbes? And I'm like, because he was worse. Like people just keep wanting to say that the guy that the Commanders put out there is the worst corner they've ever seen. And I'm like, I know it's not good, but like y'all have, your memories are that long, some of you guys. Because the funniest thing is the people who like don't have a memory that's 4 centimeters long and respond to those comments and are like, yeah, okay, Davis can't cover. Forbes couldn't cover or tackle. Or like, you know, hey, BSJ is terrible. It's like Davis can't cover. Like at least BSJ does some good stuff. It's so funny to watch these people just like have a competition to see who can be the most flagrant in their comments torching the Commanders' DBs. And unfortunately, those aren't the only people torching the Commanders' DBs, which brings us to
number six
and BSJ. And a very interesting quote from Dan Quinn after the game. So as a reminder, in this game, BSJ largely played a pretty good game, but in the true BSJ fashion, gave up a couple of really big plays. He gave up 2 touchdowns to Mike Evans on 2 fade routes where he's in fantastic position and the ball just seemingly goes through him and Mike Evans makes a great catch, because that's what Mike Evans does, is make these big, great contested catches at the catch point. And that's also what Benjamin St. Juice does, is give up these great contested catches at the catch point. And that led to this from Dan Quinn. Anthony, you have the bite on your side, yes? This from Dan Quinn in the postgame.
Yeah, we just rotated people around. And I think, like, it comes from a place of competing and knowing how to and knowing when to make the right decisions into those spaces. And so that's what we'll work on. Technique-wise, you know, like, usually you ask a player, what'd you see? And if they know how to correct it already, then you're in a good spot. And that was Ben on the first touchdown to Evans. I need to turn the other way. I need to look. Okay, you got it. If you ask a player, now I don't know, that's a bigger concern. And so those guys know the things they need to work on, and that's why it did sting. And there's a lot for us to work on. But third downs, Nick, I would say collectively defensively, I wouldn't put it on one versus the other.
So there you go. I think the interesting thing about that quote with the benefit of hindsight is it just continued to be a lot of the same stuff from St. Juice all year long. And while I think he was better this year than he was last year, like he was more good more often, the lapses are still the same lapses I think that he's had. And it's just some of this will probably continue to get better throughout his career. Some of this is penalties he picks up, some of which are legit calls, and some of which are he has a reputation for being grabby and handsy, and officials call it tight on him. And some of it is just kind of going to be who he is as a player for the rest of his career, because he's not one of the best corners in the NFL. He's not the worst corner in the NFL. He's somewhere in the middle, and maybe even below the average mark. And I think that's probably fair to say. Based off of his production this year, I mean, his PFF grade is terrible, but they kill you for penalties. So, that's kind of where it is. And every time they've tried to move away from him, something has happened to bring him back, whether it's the Marshawn Lattimore injury or, other players play that they realize, actually, this is our best option. I guess we're just going to have to hold our nose with it. And I'd imagine that they probably don't bring him back next year because he's in the final year of his contract. But that was BSJ in week one. Thanks.
Number seven.
All right, number seven, I talked about Jaden. I talked about how the first half was very scramble-filled. Really, that game was scramble-filled. But one of the things that I also wrote down as a note that has come up a ton this year is his ability to make a negative into a positive was on display in this game. How sometimes he'll take on pressure and be running around, and then you're like, oh, this 5-yard sack or 10-yard sack just turned into a 20-yard gain. That's pretty cool. Also, the missed opportunities, which he's gotten better and better at all year. So this was an interesting Jaden game. And the other random thing from Jaden in this game, Anthony, remember his helmet came off twice?
Yep.
Haven't been a problem with that. They got the right helmet size for the rest of the year.
That's a plus then.
It's fantastic.
Number eight.
Shout out to the equipment staff. Terry's day, I had written down, should have been like 4 to 5 catches for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was wide open a couple times in this game. And this was early in the season, I think, before Cliff and that staff really understood, and Jaden to an extent, really understood what they had in Terry McLaurin. Where eventually in week three, they were kind of like, this guy's our best player. We've got to get him the ball. And it was like someone got in Jaden's ear and was like, look, man, I know he doesn't look like he's open. Just throw him the ball. Let's see what happens. And Terry was like, hey, guess what? I'm the best contested catch guy in the whole entire league, which statistically is true. By a number of different metrics. He's a leader in this and that and this and that. And one of them is touchdowns on, close catches, like low separation, high production. He's just excellent at that. And in this game, he also like will win deep. And this game, like there's just not enough trust between Jaden and Terry, something that clearly developed very quickly. And something that I think will be emphasized this weekend is it always is. I mean, Terry last week could have had a much bigger first half if Jaden pulls the trigger on a couple. And then Marcus obviously force feeds him in the second half, and including two of the best, like over the middle, tough, underrated, if you know type of catches you'll see on the final drive of the game. Catches a slant and a dig that he has no business catching on either, and he caught both of them.
Number eight.
Number eight on our observation list from week one. That was number eight.
Number nine.
Number nine on our observation list from week one was, I wrote, Cliff is awake. And that has been a theme this year. Like, when this offense gets in a rut, and they will pull a trick out of the bag. And he will make sure, like, he just will not say, we're going to keep running our offense. Like, he will find a trick play. He'll find a new formation. He'll find a new whatever to try to get the offense going. And so, like, I had forgotten that that was something that goes back as far as week one. But it definitely did.
Number 10.
And unfortunately, defensive cohesion is something that has gotten a lot better since week one. The communication, not losing guys in stacks and bunches and all these types of things. It was a bit of a problem last week. Luckily, Trey Lance missed a couple of throws. But I also think part of that was Quan Martin was out, and he's one of their best communicators. So much, much harder task for Tampa's offense against this version of the Commanders defense on just simple formational stuff. But Liam Cohen is also one of the best OCs in the business this year at putting defenders in conflict. So I think that's going to be fun to watch this weekend as well. I feel like that was a good list in hindsight, Anthony.
No, it definitely was. And I think when you just look at the tape from week one and look at the tape now, it's
two totally different teams. Very, very different.
Two teams.
Tampa's different, but they're not nearly as different. And they were also a team that's now won the division 4 straight years. They've got a ton of experience. I want to talk about that factor with Melissa Stark coming up at 5 o'clock, someone who's covered a ton of playoff games in her career. But coming up next, one key to every game in Wild Card Weekend. Dan Pizzuta has the keys, and he joins us next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube if you'd like to give us a watch at the Team 980. And joining us now, as he does each and every Thursday during the football season, it's our buddy Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd Team. Pizzuta, what's up, dude? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. I'm excited for Wild Card Weekend. We got a bunch of great games. And if we can dive into your knowledge at this level, I would like to just go through game by game and get like one or two keys for each game. Let's skim the top here. Let's get into it a little bit. Maybe we don't even skim the top. Maybe we dive deep into one particular area of each game. How's that sound to you?
Sounds great.
All right, let's do it. And I think chronological order is probably the easiest one to do because then I don't have to think about it. And also, it means we get Texans and Chargers out of the way first. The annual Houston Texans playoff spot, 4:30 on Saturday. The Chargers are in Houston. Houston's defense is very good. Houston's offense is very bad. The Chargers, I think people think of them one way. Maybe the numbers say they're actually a little bit different kind of team. What do you think ultimately is the biggest deciding factor here?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the run game on each side of the ball here, because this is a Texans team that has been just exactly kind of what it has been throughout the entire season. It is a very inefficient run game that still leans into it heavily on first and second down. And if they're going to continue to do that, that's going to put them in long third downs, which is how they have faced a lot of their problems this year. And that's something that the Chargers are going to tee off on. On the other side, the run game that interests me is what Justin Herbert is going to do with his legs. There have been a couple of games this year where Herbert was at his best when he had a very high scramble rate. And I think when we kind of have some frustrations with Justin Herbert, it's because he's so robotic in his progressions that it's 1 to 2 to check down. And he, you know, checks the ball down a little more than, you know, a quarterback with his type of arm should. But there were a couple games this year where he was way more aggressive in taking off and scrambling. I think that really set the floor of that offense to be much higher than it was. Houston's one of the worst teams in the league against quarterback scrambles this year. So if that is something that is going to open up that Chargers offense, I think that's something that's going to keep them on the field. Yeah, as you know, watching this Washington team, of how much a quarterback's legs can take off there. So if Herbert is willing to do that, I think that's really going to be a tough thing for Houston to stop on defense.
I'm so glad you said that, because I heard that stat earlier. Mina Kimes, I was listening to her pod, and she talked about that. Her and Solak were talking about how Houston's run defense against like design running back runs is one of the, like, I think they're top three in the NFL. And then they're one of the three worst in the NFL against quarterback scrambles. And Herbert's a guy, especially in a playoff game, that is more than capable of taking off. I would assume they tell him, like, hey man, look for opportunities to take off. And it's funny because we think of obviously a Greg Roman offense all those years in Baltimore and San Francisco, and Jim Harbaugh, what he wants to be is like this, this pound, you know, just pound the rock, incessantly run the football team. And they're way more efficient passing the football. And I think knowing that, if they know, hey, break glass or in case of emergency and scramble, maybe they drop him back a little more and just say, hey, like, we're going to let you try to cook a little bit. If it's not there, take off running. There'll be lanes, and they can live in a way that is very different than what we'd expect considering the coaching staff in LA.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in those games kind of in the middle of the season too, I think he just looked more comfortable too. I think there was much more of a looseness in how he was playing. And he wasn't, you know, forced to, you know, throw some tight window throws that he might have had to do, you know, earlier in the season. I think now if you combined the success they had scrambling in that midseason stretch and the passing offense that they've had over these past three games, I mean, they've really only played one good defense, but that was against a Broncos defense that ended up being, you know, the best defense in the league by the end of the year. So if you take kind of what they figured out with Ladd McConkey, you know, Quentin Johnson, who I think is now questionable to play, but has been looking good over the past couple of games. If you take their passing offense that really has figured some things out and then add in what Herbert can do with his legs, I think that's going to be a really tough offensive stop.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Of course, on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Many of these games, by the way, you can listen to this weekend here on the Team 980, thanks to the good folks at Westwood One. All right, so Saturday night, you have the divisional matchup between the Steelers and the Ravens. It feels like they just played on a Saturday night. It feels like I don't remember the last time the Steelers or the Ravens played on a Sunday. They've played like Christmas, they played Saturday, they played all over the place, but they're going to play Saturday night on Amazon Prime Video. The Ravens are 9.5-point favorites, which on some level feels exactly right, and on some level feels absolutely insane considering the Pittsburgh, Baltimore rivalry. What do you think is ultimately the decider here in this third matchup between these two teams this season?
Yeah, so I think if this game is going to be close, it's going to have to come from Pittsburgh finding success in the deep pass, which is what they did the first couple of games that Russell Wilson came into the lineup. And that was really how they were getting that offense to go. A lot of the Russell Wilson moon balls he had in the, I think, 18.5% explosive pass rate over his first like seven games, which is insane. And obviously that did not keep up. And that kind of goes with George Pickens being out too and not being healthy. But his explosive pass rate has dropped to just, where am I here? Like 8.3% since.
So that's like 10% lower than it was.
Yes. And so not only is the deep ball not working quite as well, it was easily the most efficient during that first stretch. Over the second stretch now, not only is it less efficient, they're throwing the ball deep less often also. It dropped from about 15% to 11%. So that's a pretty deep drop too. And there is not a lot of, you know, structure and a lot of other things that this Pittsburgh passing offense can do to make up for that. And a lot of what their efficiency was those big plays were just really carrying them throughout most of that early stretch of Wilson starting. The thing about trying to refine that deep ball right now is Baltimore has turned into the best deep passing defense in the league since they put Kyle Hamilton back as more of a full-time safety, and they've started to figure out what that defense can be. Right now, Baltimore, we're third in EPA per play and first in success rate against the deep pass since week 10. So when you really only have one thing on offense that's working for you, and it turns out to be one of the best things that the defense you're playing defends against, I think that's going to be tough for Pittsburgh, but if they are going to stay in it, I think that's how they're going to have to do it because there's not a lot else going on for that offense.
Well, and George Pickens is the biggest enigma in the NFL. Like, some weeks you can be like, oh, is that the guy the best receiver in football? He's making the greatest catches I've ever seen. And other weeks, it just looks like he's point shaving. Like, it is truly, I don't know what you do with that if you're Mike Tomlin. I know I wouldn't want that in my building. I want guys that I can rely upon, but they're kind of built to rely on George Pickens, and thus their results are that of a team that relies on a guy as enigmatic as George Pickens.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of seems like that's been what the Steelers have done at wide receiver forever, and because it seems like Steelers receivers become more enigmas after they leave Pittsburgh, so the fact that they can kind of handle Pickens, and he does have some of these stretches where he is good, and maybe if you are Pittsburgh, you're hoping that his return from injury, now that he's got, you know, I think two games now under his belt since returning, you might have a little more of him playing at full strength, more to his full capacity. I think that if Pittsburgh, that's kind of what you're hoping for. You kind of have to lean on it because I really don't think they have a lot else.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us. And as I scroll down the schedule here, there's a Tyreek Hill story on the right. And I just, because we were talking about, I was like, oh, great. Is Tyreek Hill about to become a Steeler? because that just feels perfect. Those two teams have done business before with Minkah Fitzpatrick. Like, Tyreek Hill, Steeler for 2 years before Mike Tomlin and he are fighting on the sideline. Just feels like the next step in that, you know, Steelers wide receiver sequence and Tyreek Hill's career. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think that...
Like that would fit the mold, at least.
It would, yes. I think for Miami, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense financially for them to get out of the Tyreek Hill contract for this season, so I don't expect them that to actually be a reality. But if that does end up being the case, I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh ends up being a potential landing spot.
All right, Dan Pizzuto is with us, 33rd team. Again, you can read his work there, including his first and 10 column that he does every week. Broncos and Bills. This line has actually come down a little bit. It opened in the nines. It's now down to 8.5. The Bills hosting the Broncos, who are coming off just an absolute shellacking of what the Chiefs, I'm going to call them the Chiefs, some guys in Chiefs uniforms. What do you think the ultimate key to this one is? Is Denver now has to legitimately face arguably the best player in the sport with Josh Allen and the way that he's playing?
Yeah, so I am interested to see how Buffalo does go about offense and how they want to attack Denver's defense, which, again, like I said, finished the season first in EPA per play, first in success rate. They were easily the best defense in the league this year. What Buffalo has done and what has been really great over the past, you know, year and a half with Joe Brady is, as great as Josh Allen is, and we can see he's taken over games when he needs to, they have built the type of offense where he does not necessarily need to do that. For so long, they did not have this run game that they could lean on, you know, when they needed to take some pressure off. But now that they have that, their first game in the playoffs is going to be against a team that was easily the best run defense in the league. I know we have a lot of good things about their pass defense, but this run defense was great. So I don't know if that's what you want to lean into against Denver. So now you're going to be asking Josh Allen to kind of have the whole weight of the passing offense on his shoulders against a team that's going to be playing a lot of man coverage, which is not necessarily something that your wide receivers are going to be great at being. I do like a lot of what they have at receiver, but if you're asking, you know, a Khalil Shakir to be beating a Pat Surtain every snap, it might not work out so much. So how Buffalo figures out the balance of what they're going to be doing on offense is going to be very good. Josh Allen was still first in EPA per play against man coverage, but it is just individually per receiver, you know, they're not as strong as they are against zone. So how just Buffalo... goes against figuring out how to attack the Broncos. I just find that going to be a very interesting push and pull.
How much of Buffalo's success against the run Denver's success against the run is structural, and how much of that structure is because they have Surtain? In other words, like, are they putting just loading up the box, knowing we can play man coverage, we can play single high stuff, and Surtain's got his side of the field on lock, or is it something else that has allowed them to be as successful as they are against the run this year?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So right now they have a league average stack box rate. The league average is 22.1%. They are at 22.6. So they're not overly, you know, committing there. They do blitz a lot. So they have, you know, a lot of guys kind of around the line of scrimmage, and that's for the run and the pass, even when, you know, the actual box, you know, isn't stacked. But it is something where that interior of that defensive line is so good right now. Zach Allen has been incredible. I think he'll probably end up on an all-pro team. I think if enough people were paying attention, DJ Jones, like that interior of the defensive line just creates a lot of penetration. Their edge rushers are also very good at stopping the run. So they have a very good first line of defense there that doesn't allow a lot of things to get into the second level. And I think that's, you know, and when you do have, you have some good corners who can tackle too. Like Pat Surtain is probably one of the best, probably the best tackling cornerback in the league right now, and that's something that, you know, not all defense, really no other defense has when you kind of look at tackling league-wide or for defensive backs. So when you kind of have all of those players who can, you know, charge up to the ball, don't miss a lot of tackles, that's helped them a lot in the run game.
Yeah, Pat Surtain's the best everything corner in football. He's a weapon. Should probably win Defensive Player of the Year. That's my vote, but I don't have an actual vote, so whatever.
It would be mine also. I also don't have one, but
you should. I shouldn't. But we can talk about that another time. Dan Pizzuta's with us here on the Hoffman Show. All right, Packers and Eagles, Dan. This line is only 4.5, which I think is interesting because I think a lot of people look at the Eagles and are like, man, this team is one of the absolute best in football. They're super talented. You're presuming that Hurts is going to play. And the Packers have been, you know, obviously really good at times, but seem to be sputtering a little bit lately. They just lost to the Bears. So is there something that we're missing here that Vegas thinks this is going to be a little bit closer than I think a lot of casual fans would guess?
Yeah, I kind of think so, because I think a lot of people are downplaying how good the Packers have been. And I know you kind of said, like, at times, but they ended up third in weighted DVOA, which more heavily weights games at the end of the season, even though they did lose last week. They lost the previous week also, but like, they have played very well. They're one of the few teams that has been very good on offense, very good on defense. And so they're third in weighted DVOA. The Eagles are fourth. So I think these are slightly even match teams in some sense. I am a little concerned about what Jalen Hurts is going to look like. It's, you know, what, 2.5 weeks now in concussion protocol. So he is expected to be cleared, and we are going to see him play. But I would be a little hesitant on what that could potentially look like. But I think what I'm really looking forward to in this game is what the Eagles are going to do defensively. We kind of know Vic Fangio is a very, you know, zone heavy, has the, you know, the two deep and quarters, but they've been more willing to change it up when needed. And the Packers have a very big man coverage split when Christian Watson is on the field and when Christian Watson is not on the field. And Watson tore his ACL in the season finale, so he is not going to be playing. And Love averages 0.08 EPA per play against man with him, negative 0.32 without him. So he is someone who can stretch the field, kind of gives a little more of something that you have to worry about down the field, opens up some space for some of those other receivers. So if the Eagles, who now have some very good cornerbacks who they do trust to play man coverage, if they're going to be a little more aggressive there, I think it might be a little harder for Green Bay to be able to do what they want to do on offense. Love has been one of the best quarterbacks in the league against zone coverage this year. So if they just kind of play like they normally have, I think the Packers have some success. But if they get a little more aggressive, play some more man, I think that might slow down the Packers a little more.
Definitely going to be interesting to watch. All right, we'll save the Commanders game for last, so that would be next chronologically, but we skip to Monday. Vikings and Rams. Minnesota just 1-point favorites here. Why do you agree that the Rams can keep this one really close? To me, it just feels like depends on which Rams team shows up, but which Rams team do you think we get against a Vikings team that's coming off a really tough loss to Detroit?
Yeah, that'll be super interesting, because the Rams were a team where if you look at what they did a couple weeks ago against Buffalo, you're like, how could anyone stop this offense? They can put up points whenever they need to. And then over the next 3 weeks, they barely put up any points. So I think that they are still kind of figuring out what exactly they want to do. I think we talked, you know, earlier in the season about, you know, the pistol offense and how a lot of teams were leaning into that. And that was something the Rams were doing a lot. That was what had their back half of the season improvement last year. And they did it for about the first half of the season this year. But since the midpoint this year, they've kind of gone back to the 2021 offense with Stafford a lot more in empty and spreading things out horizontally. And that's been hit or miss, but they've been putting a lot more on Stafford's shoulders. And it's worked out sometimes. It hasn't quite in the others. I think that might be good against a Brian Flores defense, which wants to throw as many bodies around the line of scrimmage as possible, will try to confuse you about who is coming. I posted a graph today on Twitter and Blue Sky about defenses that are either blitzing or sending a sim pressure. And sim pressure is just, you know, it looks like it's going to be a blitz, but it only ends up being four. But usually that fourth rusher is not a traditional rusher. So it's still someone who, you know, would come on a blitz, but someone who would typically be a normal pass rusher dropping into coverage. The Vikings do that on 86.1% of their defensive plays, and that is easily the highest in the league. So you just don't know what they're going to be doing. But if you are spread out and empty, it kind of forces the defense to declare a little bit. They can't have so much, you know, deception along the defensive line. So I'm going to be very interested to see just how the Rams are able to kind of stop the Vikings from doing what they want to do on defense. And if they can kind of spread them out, handle that a little bit, I think this game could be a little closer.
All right, then last but not least, Dan, what everyone's been waiting for, the Dan Pizzuta key to the game for the Commanders and Buccaneers. Of course, if you want more from Dan on all these games, you can check out his work at the 33rd team. But I think a lot of people have talked about blitz rates and you know, Jaden versus pressure and the amount of unblocked pressures and how heavily the Buccaneers are blitzing. But there's a lot of other things that you could point to in this game as well. What do you think ultimately is the biggest factor?
I just want to know if either of these defenses is going to get a stop at any point in this game. And I think if there's one, that might shift the game. Because I think if you kind of look at where the strengths and weaknesses of both of these defenses are and how these offenses are playing right now, I think this definitely has the best chance to be the highest scoring game of the weekend. Just I think we kind of know what the Commanders can do. And like you said, there's a heavy blitzing from Tampa Bay. That's something Todd Bowles likes to do, but it's also something he's leaned into more because cornerback injuries and the defensive backs have just been not as good in Tampa, so they kind of have to rely on that. I think that's going to be something where Jaden Daniels can have some quick passes over the middle, also with something where he's going to use his legs. Tampa Bay right now, they have been their best when they have gotten the ball out quickly. A lot of that has come from a great designed screen game. But what's interesting, what actually surprised me when I was looking into this, Washington's defense was first in EPA per play against screens. It tied for third in success rate and seventh in yards per pass against screens. I wasn't expecting them to be quite as good. So if they can slow that down, that's very interesting. But also, Tampa Bay has been at its best when it's gotten to the quick passing game, even without screens. Washington's defense was 32nd in EPA per play against passes that were under 2.5 seconds. So I think when you can kind of get into space against Washington's defense, and that's something that I think Tampa Bay is going to be doing often, I just think there's going to be a lot of offensive strength against defensive weakness in this game. And I think whoever can get maybe a stop or two, that might be enough to really flip the game.
Yeah, for sure. Baker leads the NFL, I think, by a decent margin, even in yardage on passes completed behind the line of scrimmage, which is also a funny thing to say, or always a funny thing to say. It's like a lot of yardage, ball just doesn't go far. And Washington, I didn't know they were that good against screens, but I would have guessed they were pretty good because they have a bunch of corners who will come up and hit, led by Sanders still. And you know, teams think they can take advantage of him because he's small, and then he comes up and socks someone in the mouth. And it's like, oh, never mind. Let's try the other side, perhaps. And then, you know, you got Luvu and all these really athletic front guys that, and Wagner obviously has seen every screen that's ever been designed. So definitely going to be interesting to watch. Dan, appreciate your time as always, sir. We'll talk to you next week. Hopefully you have a chance to preview another Commanders game. We'll see how things go on Sunday night, and appreciate your time as always, sir.
All right. Thank you. Sounds good.
That's Dan Pizzuta, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Dan, of course, writing for the 33rd team. You can check his work out there. All kinds of great data always, and really good. Does a really great job of making sense of that data as well. Coming up next, though, Melissa Stark, NBC Sports sideline reporter for Sunday Night Football. She joins us. She talked to Terry McLaurin this afternoon. So you get your first dibs on hearing what she talked with Terry about, plus some of the other big storylines from this game. We'll talk through with Melissa next here on The Hoffman Show.